This is KVRX 91.7 Austin, and you are listening to Dialectica, an examination of the civic, political, and economic issues that matter to us all on global, national, and local levels. Dialectica is brought to you by students of the LBJ School of Public Affairs and is produced in partnership with the LBJ Journal of Public Affairs. We hope you enjoy the show.
September 18th, the U.S. Navy accepted the USS Freedom, the first in its class of littoral combat ships. According to a Department of the Navy press release, Freedom-class ships will help the U.S. Navy defeat threats close to shore, including mine warfare, anti-submarine warfare, and surface warfare. Littoral combat ships are fast, easy to maneuver, and are equipped with interchangeable mission modules that allow commanders to meet changing warfare needs. However, all has not been smooth sailing for the USS Freedom. In fact, the development of future Freedom-class ships may be sunk.
I think that we have to return, particularly in defense spending, which is the largest part of our appropriations, we have to do away with cost-plus contracts. We now have defense systems that the costs are completely out of control. We tried to build a little ship called the Littoral Combat Ship that was supposed to cost $140 million, ended up costing $400 million, and we still haven't done it. So we need to have fixed cost contracts. We need very badly to understand that defense spending is very important and vital, particularly in the new challenges we face in the world, but we have to get a lot of the cost overruns under control.
That was Senator John McCain at the presidential debate on September 26, 2008. Clearly, defense procurement has the attention of the candidates in this upcoming presidential election and will certainly be a pressing issue facing the next administration. Good evening. This is Sanjeet Dekka, your host for Dialectica Radio. Tonight, Dialectica will examine the ongoing debate facing defense procurement and acquisition. Most Americans readily recognize how vital military spending is to our national security, but are naturally concerned when headlines about escalating cost overruns and excessive program delays are reported. Building our nation's defense is a complex issue balancing technology, weapon system life cycles, and efficient use of taxpayer money. Today, defense procurement is a public-private partnership, a relatively recent change driven by technology.
So this problem first began in World War I because virtually overnight during World War I, the U.S. Army Air Corps was created to fight in the air. It had never been done before. So, you know, a whole U.S. aircraft industry was first developed in prior to 1918. There really was no commercial aircraft industry before then. Even though the airplane had been invented in the United States, it was mainly the domain of hobbyists and sort of small-scale experiments, and it never went into mass volume production. So during World War I, the Army had the problem of trying to get people to build aircraft.
That was Kenneth Flam, professor of economics and the Dean Rusk Chair of International Affairs at the LBJ School of Public Affairs. As weapon systems become more capable and technology advanced, weapon system lifecycle management became critical.
In the 1950s, the procurement cycle from research to product deployed in the field was 4 to 5 years. The requirements process tied very closely to the execution, the testing, the deployment. There were occasional lapses, but it produced the Polaris submarine, it produced the nuclear submarine, a whole variety of things.
That was Admiral Bobby Inman, Lyndon B. Johnson Centennial Chair in National Policy at the LBJ School of Public Affairs and former Deputy Director of the CIA. Inman also was an intelligence officer for the U.S. Navy.
Defense in 1950 was at the cutting edge of developing and introducing new technology. It now lags the commercial field in every area except the very highly specialized compartmented areas like stealth or some of the intelligence systems. By the late 90s, the procurement cycle was 12 to 15 years from introduction of technology to events in the field.
Why does it take so long to get technology to our military forces? To understand this, let's review how we develop defense spending. First, our leaders must articulate the military threat facing the U.S. Then, those leaders have to determine requirements to counter those threats. Next, they discuss and choose between, at times, conflicting needs to present a cohesive defense strategy. At every point of the process, leaders add or remove requirements, balancing internal competition within the services and Department of Defense as a whole. This defense plan percolates up to the civilian leaders in the Department of Defense, who also revise and modify these requirements. From there, the Office of Management and Budget further revises and modifies these military requirements by incorporating priorities from the National Economics Council, National Security Council, and Commander-in-Chief, the President. The President then submits this defense proposal to Congress. Congress further modifies this proposal in authorizing committees and appropriation committees before going to the House for a vote. Congress votes, then the President signs, and that becomes our Department of Defense budget. This is one step in the process of defense acquisition.
So the bottom line is there are these three sort of stages in how money gets spent. First, it gets appropriated through legislation. Then it gets obligated when contracts are signed, essentially authorizing the expenditure of the funds that were committed when the appropriations law was passed. And finally, it actually gets expended. And those are three different concepts. So any given program is going to have three different things associated with it. It's going to have an appropriation. It's going to have contracts that are actually obligated. And it's going to have expenditures over time. It may take various years from those obligated funds. And none of those three things is necessarily equal to one another.
Defense spending is not as simple as signing a check. Why is defense spending so challenging?
What's unique about the acquisition problem of the Department of Defense is that certainly in the 20th century, particularly since World War II, the key objective of the U.S. Department of Defense has been fielding technologically superior, qualitatively better systems that give U.S. forces qualitative advantages in combat that will compensate for being potentially numerically smaller in terms of number of soldiers, airmen, and sailors in the field. So the sort of bedrock of our philosophy and strategy in fielding defense forces is to substitute technological superiority for brute force numbers. That's sort of a key.
Once the United States committed itself to using technology to offset any potential numerical shortcomings, the next challenge was how to contract for research and development in high technology.
And the problem then is that we have been building cutting-edge systems since at least World War II, and we're building stuff that has never been built before. So there's uncertainty about what the cost is going to be. There's uncertainty about what the performance is going to be. If you were building stuff that had already been developed, you would have neither the uncertainty about cost nor the uncertainty about performance, because you would be buying stuff that other people were already buying.
If developing leading-edge technology is an uncertain process, how does the Defense Department contract for its development? Generally, most government contracts fall into variations of two broad categories: fixed cost contracts and cost plus contracts, which is also known as cost reimbursement contracts. Lieutenant Colonel Fred Putoff, a U.S. Army Senior College Fellow at the University of Texas at Austin, is an acquisition professional, and he outlines for us the major categories of cost reimbursement contracts.
So you have cost reimbursement contracts. Now, there's different types of cost reimbursement contracts. You could have a cost plus award fee contract. You can have a cost plus fixed fee contract. And you can even have like a cost plus incentive fee contract. And really the definition of a cost reimbursement contract is that you're really paying the contractor for its best effort. And you're going to be paying them what it costs them to be able to develop the product or the service that you want them to do. And it's key that is you actually may not get a 100% working product or something out there at the end of the contract because you're paying for their effort. Firm fixed price contracts are something that the Department of Defense usually likes to do. What it is, it provides more of the risk onto the contractor and provides less risk to the government. The government knows up front exactly what it's going to cost. Mm-hmm. And the outcome is supposed to be a product or a service that you define in that contract that the contractor has to live up to.
The Littoral Combat Ship is on a cost-plus contract, as are most major weapon systems purchases. There are many compelling reasons why cost-plus contracts are used for new weapon systems.
Cost-plus is the government pays for all the cost, and then there is a fee on top of that.
So you can think of a situation where a defense contractor might be willing to invest its own money in R&D for a system. But if there's only one customer, then if that customer decides, no, it's not going to buy that system, then it's lost all of its money if it invests its own money in R&D for that system. So it's not going to want to do that unless it has a pretty high probability that the customer is going to buy what it invests those billions of dollars in producing for the customer. The other possibility is it can invest lots of money in R&D, but then turn around and sell it to everybody. But the problem with that is that DOD certainly is not going to support them doing that, and therefore, if their intention is to sell it to everybody, then that's not something DOD is going to be very enthusiastic about buying, is it? And, to further complicate matters, if it's military technology, there are export control laws because the U.S. Congress has decided that selling the most advanced technology available in the United States for military systems to just anybody is not a very good idea.
I believe cost-plus contracts are necessary in the development stage. And that's because of the uncertainties that are there. And therefore, you don't want anything hidden. You want everything to surface that's a potential problem.
There's no disputing the Littoral Combat Ship has experienced significant cost overruns, far beyond the initial cost estimate. Cost-plus contracts present their own risks because the ability to accurately predict project cost is very difficult.
If we could do a better job at the outset in estimating cost and time, it would help. That's a very special skill. Mm-hmm. And even in the, I go out and look, I've looked across the corporate world, I find very few where the very first estimate of what something might cost proves to be valid over time.
But accurate estimates are not the only problem with cost-plus contracts.
But the key is up front, you don't know the exact cost of that contract because it's going to be based upon their effort. If the contractor overspends, you still got to pay the contractor that amount.
There's no incentive for the contractor to reduce costs, right? Because they're going to get a profit markup on whatever they end up spending. And so that's another alternative. And the problem with that is that it's an incentive problem. There's no incentive to minimize costs. And in fact, the bigger the cost overrun, the larger the cost, the larger the profit. And that doesn't sound very good either.
In an effort to prevent further cost overruns, Congress has introduced legislation. However, these attempts often have complicated the procurement process further.
Congress then began adding layers. Separating the requirements from the execution, requiring that as you went about the actual procurement process, if you made any change in the requirement, you had to go back to the Congress. If you made any change at all in the timescale, mm-hmm. you had to go back to Congress. Layers kept being added, additional auditors, again, that you had to respond to. You estimate what you think a system will cost. But you're operating on a very little solid data. But once you submit that in your budget, that's then locked in. And anything that changes in that process, it's your mismanagement, not the fact that you've now better refined, you better understand the needs, but you're still tied by the all the regulations to go back and then take a beating each time you go back for explaining why you have an overrun.
Maybe cost-plus contracts do not provide the best incentives for defense procurement. As we heard earlier, Senator McCain suggests fixed-price contracts as a solution to prevent cost overruns. Although at first glance that seems like an attractive solution, fixed-price contracts may not be well-suited for new weapon systems either.
The problem with a fixed-price contract is that you don't know how much it's going to cost. So even if the DoD has done a wonderful job and negotiated this terrific fixed-price contract, and it turns out the contractor, who may be one of two or three companies that could possibly produce this thing in the first place, has the technological expertise to do it, gets to the point where, okay, we're building it, it's performing more or less as advertised, but it's costing double what it cost us, what we thought it was going to cost, and we're losing money on every one we ship to you, yeah, you can go ahead and enforce that fixed price contract, but we're going to go bust. Is that something you really want? So the point is, I signed the contract, I'm going to deliver this to you for some fixed price, but unfortunately I didn't estimate the cost very well, and it's costing me double what I thought it was going to be costing me, and therefore I'm losing money on every one I ship to you. Yeah, you can demand that I enforce, that you know, we stick to the contract, but I'm going to go bankrupt, and you're not going to get your product. So how's that going to help you?
Faced with the risk of losses on fixed cost contracts, defense contractors have adjusted their strategy.
The sad reality in fixed price is industries learned how to game it. They will take components out to fit within the fixed price, and then they come back with change orders to add those capabilities. And those change orders do not have cost controls. That's how they come back and make the profit. When they underbid at the outset, what they know their costs are going to be, knowing that they're going to make up on the change orders that come along.
Both contracting systems present opportunities and risks, and each presents conflicting incentives.
On cost reimbursement contracts, the risk is on the government. Because the government, it's really on the government, because you don't know exactly what the cost is going to end up being. Mm-hmm. So it could be an overrun or an underrun. Whereas on the other hand, on a fixed price contract, the risk is on the contractor, because the contractor has to perform within that given cost that's allocated to them, or within that price. The risk on the contractor could be good and bad, because if the contractor can come up with some innovative technology or a way of producing these things cheaper than what they originally anticipated, they're going to make more profit on it. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if they have some sort of a problem in their production that caught and drags out or takes longer and they have to spend more money, then they could end up actually losing money on the contract, or lessen their profit margin.
So the current procurement system basically has these conflicting objectives. On the one hand, you want DoD to buy these very, very complex leading-edge systems as cheaply as possible, and that argues for competition, right? On the other hand, no firm in its right mind is going to invest the kind of investments needed to create these leading-edge systems unless it has a pretty good assurance that it's going to be tapped to supply the system, okay? And it also is going to worry that if it does have some assurance that it's going to be tapped to supply the system, it wants a price for that system that at least covers its costs plus a reasonable return. So how do you do that?
Reconciling these competing incentives is a problem.
So you have kind of this trade-off between a system where you fix the price but run the danger that you could essentially run your contractor into the ground if there's a misestimation of the costs or risks, or you can do a cost-plus contract, but the problem with that is you give up any incentive on the part of the contractor to do things efficiently. So how do you solve this problem?
The defense procurement problem may not entirely be with the contracting system itself. Unlike other industries in the United States, defense procurement does not conform to the typical model of market forces. Recent commentary suggests defense contractors act as a monopoly or a market with one supplier, while the Department of Defense acts as a monopsony or a market with one consumer. This unique relationship creates an imperfect market.
You have only a single bidder and a single person, the odds are you're in trouble.
This unique relationship has presented challenges from the beginning. Once again, referring to the story of aircraft production in World War I for the U.S. Army Air Corps, we understand this exclusive relationship has been marked with obstacles.
So during World War I, the Army had the problem of trying to get people to build aircraft, which is very much the problem we've just been talking about. No one knew how much it was going to cost. Did you give them fixed price contracts and, you know, then drive them in and then have them collapse in bankruptcy when they realized that they had not correctly estimated the cost of building that aircraft for you? Did you give them cost plus contracts and then their costs started to go up and they made more profit that way? And so it was, you know, as expected, you might have things like procurement scandals. So this was an issue that the Army confronted during World War I, and then again in the 1920s.
What must change to improve the system?
I don't see any change unless you can get rid of the bulk of the congressional requirements, which overlap and overlayer. You need to really throw out the whole current process. Put premium on speed of the use of the technology into a product, and a requirement that you trade off money with requirements. Now, would that system work? Absolutely. I did it when I was a director of the National Security Agency.
Aside from removing oversight requirements that do not contribute to the procurement process, clear communication of the priorities and requirements is necessary. Perhaps increased use of commercial technology may allow the military to deploy systems with less research and development. Additionally, making the rapid deployment of systems a higher priority, even if in a developmental stage, may contribute to solving this challenge.
A lot of times people are looking at the 99% solution out there to come up with a solution that will work out in the field. Mm-hmm. But right now, at the time of war, the commander's out there saying, I can't wait for a 99% solution. You know, if I can have a 75% solution today, that's better than having nothing and waiting, you know, 5 to 10 years to get something out there.
Yesterday, the USS Independence, the second of the littoral combat ships, was christened. If cost overruns and construction delays are not brought under control, there is the prospect that these two ships may be the only ships of its class. At present, the United States cannot afford the number of ships it needs to carry out its military strategy. We need these ships. The future of the Navy's capabilities relies with these ships. The littoral combat ship is one example of several key programs that face extinction if the procurement process is not revamped. Clearly, this is an unresolved issue, nor does there appear to be a convenient solution. But defense procurement demands close attention from our leadership and citizens. As outlined by retired Admiral James Lyons in a Washington Times commentary, the United States has, quote, the most sophisticated and technically superior combat forces in the world today, end quote. Lyons gives great credit for the military's capabilities and strengths to defense procurement. No question. As the next administration takes office, it will be engaged in two conflicts that will require efficient and optimized use of money to provide our military with the best available equipment to carry out their missions. Defense procurement is a difficult and complex policy, but our military personnel deserve our best effort. Our next president must reorganize our defense procurement policies in order to provide for a more perfect defense for our nation.
Dialectica has been brought to you by the students of the LBJ School of Public Affairs in partnership with the LBJ Journal of Public Affairs. Sources for our show can be found on our website, which can be accessed through kbrx.org. Any opinions offered on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of the LBJ School of Public Affairs, the University of Texas, or KBRX Student Radio. Thank you to our producers and our guests, and remember, you are listening to KBRX Austin.